Whether I'm prepared or not, he's going to see that you hear me. I never feel like I'm prepared. Maybe that's the best way. I don't know. I did appreciate the song. I'm sure as we look back on this last week, it's in the hearts of all of us that the Lord has his own way. And this is certainly what's in my heart, although I realize that, like the history of the church has been from the beginning, men, and I might say women too, have endeavored to have their own ways from time to time, and it's got us into trouble. And that's really a theme that runs through the thoughts which I have felt to bring, even when he asked me last Monday or Tuesday, whatever day it was. No, it couldn't have been that one. Whatever day the bishops met. And as I have thought about the last 74 and a fraction years, I made a observation in the sacrament service this morning in my testimony, which I tried to keep brief and doesn't always work. I wasn't really born into the church. I was born in a cold day in December over on C Avenue, but just a few days later, I know they took me up to that church and had me blessed. And at a later time on the old font, which used to be out off of the southwest corner, I was baptized. And as I grew up to that period of time, I slept as a little baby on the front seats because that's where my folks always want me so that they could keep track of me from up in the pulpit or in the choir. While my aunts, both in the, and sometimes uncles, both of the flesh and those of the church, kind of tried to keep us in line as we grew up. And as I got older and traveled with my father in the missionary field, as did the rest of the family from time to time, I was eventually called into the priesthood, which I didn't want at all. I'd seen enough priesthood in those years to know that this was not a guarantee of anything, unless you could follow the Lord and listen to him. And then it was a very hard but rewarding job, but I didn't really want it. And when Mildred and I came back here in 1938 after our marriage in North Idaho, and shortly after that, a year or so, called in to be an elder by an apostle who has long since passed on, and another year later into the bishopric, I've had the privilege of serving not just in the ministry, but as a trustee among six others, of a piece of property which is sacred to the whole restoration movement. I was told by a prominent official in one of the other churches that we should realize that they are not look upon it as sacredly as we do. Well, that's understandable. But it's in regard to that piece of property that I have felt this evening to speak about it to us about a little bit, or maybe quite a bit, of history. But as a text, I guess you could call it, I would like to read from the third chapter of the book of Ezekiel. And while I realize that he is speaking primarily on another subject, yet I believe the things which he sets out here applies to every one of us, whether we are ministry or members of the Church of Christ. In the 17th verse, after he's already given the background of some of the things that was happening in Ezekiel's time, as he was, if I understand right, was in captivity with the rest of them and had begun to move out to speak to the various peoples that the Lord was preparing to bring back and to build up again Jerusalem. The 17th verse says, Son of man, I have made thee a watchman. And that's what I'm talking about. We, whether we're ministry or members of the Church of Christ, are watchmen. And I know primarily that falls upon the ministry. But every one of us who has been baptized into Christ and have become members of the Church of Christ with headquarters on the Temple Lot in Independence, Missouri, are watchmen. And if we listen to the warnings which our Heavenly Father sends to us from time to time, and we discharge our duties as watchmen and speak to the people, in a kindly way, but in a firm way, that certain things are coming and how to meet them, how to prepare ourselves individually and help the people throughout the world, and especially the communities in which we live, to meet them, then we will have been able to serve God and to assist him in this great work. It says, When I say unto the wicked, Thou shalt surely die, and thou givest him not warning, nor speaketh to warn the wicked from his wicked way, to save his life. The same wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at thy hand. Yet, if thou warn the wicked, and he turn not from his wicked way, nor from his wickedness, nor from his wicked way, he shall die in his iniquity. But thou hast delivered thy soul. Again, when a righteous man doth turn from his righteousness and committeth iniquity, I lay a stumbling block before him. I didn't write this. Ezekiel wrote this sometime around 590 B.C. That when we disobey God, when we ignore his warning as a ministry, and I'm going to say as a people, then he lays a stumbling block in our way. Before him he shall die, because thou hast not given him warning. He shall die in his sin, and his righteousness which he hath done shall not be remembered, but his blood will I require at thine hand. Nevertheless, if thou warn the righteous man that the righteous sin not, and he doth not sin, he will surely live, because he is warned. Also thou hast delivered thy soul. And the main theme here, as I want to use it this evening, is that God requires of us as watchmen to give the warnings which he has instilled within our hearts. I heard a testimony this morning from a brother, and I'm not sure, I can't see too well out there, that was more testimony of his having seen the church building burn. Sister Sheldon and I, I'll say 5 or 6 years ago, because I don't remember the exact date, within 3 or 4 days of each other, had a dream in which we saw the church building burn. In the dream I had, I was coming down Lexington Avenue from the square, which is my normal, used to be my normal way to come down. And as I cleared the buildings over on Lexington, could see the church, I could see it looked just about like it does now, except that the front had burned more and it was caving in. And as I got a little closer, I could see two people, Brother Sheldon and Sister Doris, carrying papers and bundles of books and things out of the church. And before I could get up there to help them, I woke up. I know that the two of us have related this from time to time to individuals, not in a great public outcry, but just as a dream which we had. So I wasn't surprised. I was asked that, were you surprised? No, I wasn't surprised, because I remembered the dream which I did. I was saddened, because to me it brings to an end an era of time in this Church of Christ. I know that some of you would just as soon I never read out of the doctrine cabinets, and you've got a problem, not me. 57th section, which was given in July of 1831. I'd like to read at least a portion of the first verse. I don't want to get into the rest of it. It's another subject. This was in July as they were preparing to come to Jackson County, Missouri. And this is what was given. Hearken, O ye elders of my church, saith the Lord your God, who have assembled yourselves together according to my commandments in this land, which is the land of Missouri. So they had already, many of them already arrived here, which I have appointed and consecrated for the gathering of my saints. Wherefore this is the land of promise and the place of the city of Zion. And thus saith the Lord your God, if you will receive wisdom, here is wisdom. Behold, the place which is now called Independence is the place, and the spot for the temple is lying westward upon a lot which is not far from the courthouse. Wherefore it is wisdom that the land should be purchased by the saints, and also every tract lying westward, even unto the line running directly between Jew and Gentile, which is now the Kansas-Missouri line. At that time, it was Indian Territory on the western side. And also every tract bordering by the prairie, inasmuch as my disciples are enabled to buy lands. Behold, this is wisdom that ye shall obtain it for an inheritance, an everlasting inheritance. The thought which I have felt to get into tonight is the spot for the temple, as you probably have already surmised. Section 83, which was given in September, it's a two-part revelation put together in one when they printed it. September the 22nd and 23rd of 1832 at Kirtland, Ohio. And I would like to read the first two verses and then the seventh and eighth verses. A revelation of Jesus Christ unto his servant Joseph Smith Jr. and six elders, as they united their hearts and lifted their voices on high, yea, the word of the Lord concerning his church, established in the last day for the restoration of his people, as he has spoken by the mouth of his prophets and by the gathering of his saints, to stand upon Mount Zion, which shall be the city New Jerusalem, which city shall be built beginning at the temple lot, which is appointed by the finger of the Lord in the western boundaries of the state of Missouri, and dedicated by the hand of Joseph Smith, Jr. and others, with whom the Lord was, past tense, was well pleased. Verily, this is the word of the Lord, that the city of New Jerusalem shall be built by the gathering of the saints, beginning at this place, even the place of the temple, which shall be reared in this generation. For verily, this generation shall not all pass away, until a house shall be built unto the Lord, and a cloud shall rest upon it, which cloud shall be even the glory of the Lord, which shall fill the house. And that's a portion of the second verse. And it gets into another subject on priesthood and so forth, which I don't want to get into at the present time. There's always been a problem with that statement in the second verse, that it would be built in this generation and that they should not all pass away. I would cite you to the 24th chapter of the book of Matthew in the 34th verse, which reads almost exactly like that, except he had told of a great number of events which were to take place in that generation, and he says it about the same way. This generation shall not all pass away. Now, he was not speaking about the generation in which he lived or in which he gave the prophecy, but he was speaking of a generation in the latter days in which those things would begin to come about. And I, with others, believe that's exactly what he was saying to Joseph here. Not that generation which lived there. I went through all this discussion, how long is a generation, and heard it back. I've got to quit using those words. We're supposed to be a friendlier country, and I know we ought to be friendlier and more concerned as a people. But I got to quit using some of these words. We need to understand that God had a plan and He was revealing it to a people for future generations. And when these things begin to come about, those generations, they would not pass away. It would not pass away until His house was built. And you can find in the truth teller, and I didn't write down the verse or page or chapter, when they covered that same thing, about 35 years later as they began to study the scriptures and came to the same conclusion that it was not that particular generation which was fast passing away, but a generation in the future in which things which had not yet come to pass were foretold would also happen. I'd like to read another short passage out of the 94th chapter section of the Doctrine and Covenants, which was given on August the 2nd of 1833 at Kirtland, Ohio. You may remember, and it says in the heading of this particular book of Doctrine and Covenants, that they were already having problems in Missouri, that they had been attacked by mobs, and they had begun to prepare to leave by April the 1st of 1834, when this revelation was given. And I want to read the, let me get back to 83, because I overlooked reading that other verse, that other two verses that I wanted to. Verse 7 of the section 83 says this: "And now I gave you a commandment to beware concerning yourselves, to give diligent heed to the words of eternal life, because ye shall live by every word that proceedeth forth from the mouth of God." Now, we've heard that over and over from other prophets and other men of God who have spoken to us, that we have to rely upon every word which proceedeth out of the mouth of God. "For the word of the Lord is truth, and whatsoever is true is light. And whatsoever is light is spirit, even the spirit of Jesus Christ. And the spirit giveth light to every man that cometh into the world. And the spirit enlighteneth every man through the world that hearkeneth to the voice of the spirit. And every one that hearkeneth to the voice of the spirit cometh unto God, even the Father. And the Father teaches him the covenant which he hath renewed and confirmed upon him, which he confirmed upon you for your sakes, and not for your sakes only, but for the sake of the whole world." And you might remember here that he is speaking not only to Joseph, but to six elders who were there present, of their duties and responsibilities. "And the whole world lieth in sin and groweth under darkness and under the bondage of sin. And by this you may know they are under the bondage of sin, because they come not unto me. For whosoever cometh not unto me is under the bondage of sin. And whoso receiveth not my voice is not acquainted with my voice and is not of me. And whoso receiveth not my voice is not acquainted with my voice and is not of me." And as we read the history and recount it to you this evening of certain events, I would hope you would keep this in mind. If we don't recognize the voice of the Lord when He speaks to us, if we don't follow it as we purport to accept it, if we don't follow it when we say we accept it, then we have not truly received the voice of the Lord, and we are not of him. That's what this says. And by this you may know the righteous from the wicked, and that the whole world groaneth under sin and darkness, even now. And here is a critical part which most of us, I'm sure, have heard quoted, not always saying where it's quoted from, because it says similar things in other places, but all down through our lives in reference to the restoration movement, most of us, I'm sure, have heard this. And your minds in times past have been darkened because of unbelief, and because you have treated lightly the things you have received, which vanity and unbelief hath brought the whole church under condemnation. And this condemnation resteth upon the children of Zion, even all. And they shall remain under this condemnation until they repent and remember the new covenant, even the Book of Mormon. But he doesn't stop there, as some people would like to tell us. He doesn't stop there. He says, even the Book of Mormon and the former commandments which I have given them, not only to say, but to do according to that which I have written, that they may bring forth fruit, meat for their Father's kingdom. Otherwise there remaineth a scourge and a judgment to be poured out upon the children of Zion. For shall the children of the kingdom pollute my holy land? Verily I say unto you, nay. And as we go further, God being willing and time didn't run out, I'd like for you to keep that in mind, that he was not only speaking to the church in that day, but unto us in our day, that we will remain under this condemnation until not only we say we accept, but we do the things which he has called upon us to do. And in the 94th section, beginning with the third verse, we find this. Verily I say unto you that it is my will that an house should be built unto me in the land of Zion, like unto the pattern which I have given you. Yea, let it be built speedily by the tithing of my people. Now I realize fully that we as human beings, and I heard somebody refer to that, I think this morning, Brother Harris made a comment something like this. We sometimes think this is today or tomorrow, in some cases yesterday, when it says speedily. But you know, 1,000 years is pretty quick with the Lord. And if you listen to some scientists, and I don't say you should listen to them all the time, but once in a while, you get an idea of what they're thinking about. If some of these galaxies way out there are some 3 or 4,000 billion light years away, then 1,000 years, or even the 150 some odd years we have existed as a church, is pretty speedy. Be built speedily by the tithing of my people. Behold, this is the tithing and the sacrifice which I the Lord require at their hands, that there may be an house built unto me for the salvation of Zion, for a place of thanksgiving for all saints, and for a place of instruction for all those who are called to the work of the ministry. How many of you hold the ministry in Church of Christ? Raise your hand up. How many of you think you need instruction in the duties and responsibilities of your ministry and what the Lord would have you to teach? Well, I see there were fewer hands that time than before, which is rather interesting. In all things pertaining to the kingdom of God on the earth and the keys of the kingdom, and the keys of which kingdom have been conferred upon you. And inasmuch as my people build an house unto me in the name of the Lord, and do not suffer any unclean thing to come into it, that it be not defiled, my glory shall rest upon it. Yea, and my presence shall be there. For I will come into it, and all the pure in heart that shall come into it shall see God. But if it be defiled, I will not come into it, and my glory shall not be there, for I will not come into unholy temples. And now behold, is Zion do these things. She shall prosper and spread herself and become very, very glorious and very great and very terrible. And the nations of the earth shall honor her and shall say, surely Zion is the city of our God, and surely Zion cannot fall, neither be moved out of her place. For God is there, and the hand of the Lord is there, and he has sworn by the power of his might to be her salvation and her high tower. Therefore, verily, thus saith the Lord, let Zion rejoice, for this is Zion, the pure in heart. Therefore, let Zion rejoice, while all the wicked shall mourn. For behold, and lo, vengeance cometh speedily upon the ungodly as the whirlwind, and who shall escape it? The Lord's scourge shall pass over by night and by day, and the report thereof shall vex all people. Yet it shall not be stayed until the Lord come, for the indignation of the Lord is kindled against their abominations and their wicked works. And how much more has this nation and the world drifted into those things which the Lord in ancient times said were abominable unto him. And how much of scourge of various kinds and intensities and durations has the world suffered from that day to this and increasing. Nevertheless, Zion shall escape if she observe to do all things whatsoever I have commanded her. But if she observe not to do whatsoever I commanded her, I will visit her according to all her works, with sore afflictions and with pestilences and with plagues and with swords and with vengeance and with devouring fire. And maybe that's where this young man got that idea of burning the church. But I question the source of being divine that took him that path. Nevertheless, let it be read this once in their ears, that I, the Lord, have accepted of their offering, and if she sin no more, none of these things shall come upon her, and I will bless her with blessings and multiply a multiplicity of blessings upon her and upon her generations forever and ever, saith the Lord your God. And on over into the 98th section. And for brevity, get it out and study it from some time. We need to do this as a people and especially as a ministry, because there's too many people that have questions in their mind and too many of us that don't really make a sincere effort to try to understand what the Lord is saying, or in all honesty, if he has said some of the things. Well, the first two, three verses of it is kind of setting a background for the things that are coming. But in the third verse, he says, behold, I say unto you, there were jarrings and contentions and envyings and strifes and lustful and covetous desires among them. Therefore, by these things, they polluted their inheritance. And I think this was given in December of 1833. They were slow to hearken unto the voice of the Lord their God. Therefore, the Lord their God is slow to hearken unto their prayers, to answer them in the day of their trouble. In the day of their peace, they esteem lightly my counsel. But in the day of their trouble of necessity, they feel after me. Verily I say unto you, nevertheless, their sins, my bowels are filled with compassion toward them, and I will not utterly cast them off. And in the day of wrath, I will remember mercy. I have sworn, and the decree hath gone forth by a former commandment, which I have given unto you, that I would let fall the sword of mine indignation in behalf of my people. And even as I have said, it shall come to pass. Mine indignation is soon to be poured out without measure upon all nations, and this shall I do when the cup of their iniquity is full. And in that day, all who are found upon the watchtower, these watchmen again, which we should be, or in other words, all mine Israel, shall be saved, and they that have been scattered shall be gathered, and all they who have mourned shall be comforted, and all they who have given their lives for thy name shall be crowned. Therefore let your hearts be comforted concerning Zion, for all flesh is in mine hand. Be still, and know that I am God. Zion shall not be moved out of her place, notwithstanding her children are scattered. They that remain are pure in heart, and are pure in heart, shall return and come to their inheritance. They and their children with singing, with songs of everlasting joy, to build up the waste places of Zion, and all these things that the prophets might be fulfilled. And behold, there is none other place appointed than that which I have appointed, neither shall there be any place appointed than that which I have appointed for the work of the gathering of my saints, until the day cometh that there is found no more room for them. And then I have other places which I will appoint unto them, and they shall be called stakes for the curtains of the strength of Zion. And he goes ahead with some other prophecies, which for brevity I'll stop there. We're all aware of the revelation which is in the truth teller, which came from or through Granville Hedrick in 1864, which brought our people to Independence, Missouri. I would like to read a portion of that revelation. And I'm going to start right in the middle of the first paragraph, because the whole thing seems to be primarily a paragraph as it was printed here on page 4 of the truth teller. And it says, inasmuch as my church and people have been driven and scattered, therefore take counsel of me, your Lord and director, who says unto you, prepare yourselves and be ready against the appointed time which I have set and prepared for you, that you may return in the year A.D. 1867, which time of your prayers and faithfulness in all things will open and prepare a way before you, that you may begin to gather at that time. Hear now, O ye my people and my church, take counsel together, that you may escape the awful calamities of war and famine which shall fall upon the people of the northern states. And he gets into another prophecy, which some believe have come to pass, and some of us believe, or some believe have not come to pass, and some of us believe have. Not only just among the Gentiles who fought upon this land, but if you want to look into the history of the Native Americans, as they like to be called now, in that year, the most ferocious and far most extended battles of the Indian nations in the north central states began and continued for quite a number of years afterwards before it was finally put down, which eventually brought on the great depressions and famines of the 1880s, if I remember the dates right. I would like to read out of the Searchlight I wouldn't either. I made a note that after they had come down here and arrived in the latter part of February, first part of March of 1867, and got their families established, they began to purchase the temple lots. The first lots were purchased in September of 1867 by John Hedrick, a brother of Granville, and his wife. And by March of 1874, another elder, William Eaton, and his wife had purchased the other 5 lots. And when they had purchased them, they deeded them over to Granville Hedrick Trustee and Trust for the Church of Christ, under which deed we hold title and have defended it in the courts today. If you look in your outline history on page 115 and 16, you'll find that the first church that was built on that lot was burned again by a member of the church who became disaffected with the church because they hadn't followed some of the things which he had wanted to do. What I would like to back up a little bit and read you something from page 261 of the Searchlight. They were having a discussion, and actually this article was printed in the Searchlight in 1898, about a month after that church building, the first one, was burned. And they were reviewing here some of the history and what they should do then, and then they remembered a revelation which had been given in 1872. When they had first petitioned the Lord about building on the site, since they weren't at that time in a position to build a temple. And they had quite a discussion about it, as you read in the old records. And when they looked into it and found matters that they desired counsel upon. And as a result of that, here is a portion of the revelation which is published here. And note the similarity to the building which we had on the temple lot until the 1st of January. It says, and as to the building of an house unto the Lord in Independence, the saints, if they are faithful, shall have power to accomplish it, but let it not be built after the manner of the church, but for a house of business, for the building of the temple draweth nigh. And again, what's nigh to the Lord? Was that 1872? Or was that back in 1831 when he gave the first revelations begin to about building a temple there? Or is it in some future date not far off ahead of us? Therefore, let the first house be a house for business, for store, for printing, and for council, and also for meeting and worshiping when practical. But not to be built after the manner of the church, but for business as preparatory for that which is to come. Let the house be built after the fall conference upon the place and the size as may be decided upon by the conference. And one of the things which is in this article, which I'll not take time to read, is they began to wonder within themselves why they didn't build that at first. Because what they did, and you'll find it in the picture in the outline history, I think it's on page 115, you'll find the little church that they built. About between a third and a half of the size of the downstairs of the present building. Or past present building, maybe I should say. And it's my understanding that a part of the old foundation on one side of it is what holds up the pillars in the middle of the church. I know some haven't been in there. I crawled down in under there years ago when I was better able to crawl and see. And there is a portion of a foundation under there, and the pillars are sitting on top of it. And so that building lasted until, they dedicated it, authorized construction in 1887, some 15 years after the revelation had been given in 72. And they accepted it and discharged the committee in October of 1899 at what was then a semiannual conference. They held one on the 6th of April and they held one in October. And then it was burned on September the 4th of 1898. And then they began to search to find out what had happened to it. And in a sense, that's what I'm trying to do. Try to search to find out what happened to it. To us. So they began again in October to petition the Lord. And the committee that was set up by that conference began again to petition the Lord, as has been our custom down through the years most of the time. There's sometimes we get into things without a whole lot of petitioning to the Lord, and it's always got us into trouble. But they petitioned the Lord. One of the things you may remember in one of the readings of one of the revelations was, if they accept the word of the Lord and do it, then the Lord will take care of their needs. Well, to me, when the Lord told them how to build a house there and what its purpose was, and they built something else, you couldn't expect anything else, but a few years later it's going to be burned or destroyed or become useless. And that's exactly what happened to them. On page 127 in your outline history, you'll find several references to the way in which they went about building the present building. And as I read this, I feel like I need to make a public apology to Leslie back there. I've measured that church a half dozen times through the years, and I had it in my mind it was 51 feet long, and it very plainly says right here that it was 30 by 54, Leslie. And I'm sorry that figures don't always stick in my head, so I try to make some notes, and sometimes they get away from me. But they passed a resolution at the October conference of 1898 as follows. Moved and seconded that this conference recommend the Independence Branch to erect a building on the temple lots, said building to be 2 stories in height, 30 feet in width, 54 feet in length, the upper part of said building to be used for a place of meeting, worship, and council, and the lower part to be used for store, for printing, and for such other purposes as may in the future be determined upon, said building to be constructed of wood and of such height as the building committee may decide upon. And they built that and dedicated it on the 6th of April of 1902. And it was burned down on the 1st of January of 1990. After they had built the building, and as the years went by, if you look into the history, you'll find that they followed some other directions which the Lord had given, that they should proceed to work with other divisions of the restoration and try to gather out or come to a unity of understanding upon the work and how they should work together and begin to accomplish together the work of the Lord. This came about to a certain extent, I believe, as I read the history, by a vision which was held by Brother George Cole shortly after he had been baptized into the church. And again, I don't remember the exact date and didn't undertake to look it up. It's in some of the histories, and I've read it a time or two, but dates seem to get away from me at times. But the sense of it was that on the temple lot, he saw a stump of a tree, which is about 3 or 4 feet in diameter and some 2 or 3 feet high. And that out of it was growing a small shoot with four or five buds on it. I don't remember the exact number. And then he saw the main body of the tree laying across to the north and bending to the west. And the instructions in this to the ministry, or I think it says the elders of the Church of Christ, was to go through and cut out the live branches and graft them back into the stump. But he saw something else which should be taken account of to us. He saw on this stump men who were trying to clean out the rotted part around this little shoot was coming up. And they were in danger of destroying it because they were just, you know, I don't know if you've ever cut any brush out in your backyard or out in the woods or wherever you might be. But a lot of times you go chopping around, you don't know what you're going to do. Not only are you going to chop the wrong thing down here, you might catch it in a branch back here and hit yourself in the head. It's happened to people and they've been badly hurt. I remember one time back in the 30s when I worked in the CCCs, because I'd lived at that time about 2 or 3 years in North Idaho and worked for the Blister Rust and the Forest Service. They put me in charge of a small crew to teach them how to use an axe. And these axes is like a lot you see of woodsmen. There's a double-bladed axe, and it'll get you on both ends if you're not, both sides if you're not careful. Both ends, too, if you're not careful. And so I lined them up and demonstrated how to do it, and had another fellow that was supposed to stand there and hold the axe until he was given word what to do. But before I could stop him, he got his foot stuck out like this in the axe, and he was going to split the tree. Well, he split his foot right down between the big toe and the one next to it. And that ended his career in the CCs because he never did get able to come back. But you know, that was what was happening on this stump. In one of the revelations which I read, the Lord referred to it as jarrings and contentions. And we've had our share. And I'm sorry, but at times probably I've got into some of them. And it's a hard thing sometimes for us to stay out. We need to get over that. Oh, it's fine to disagree with somebody if you think you're right. But there's a way to do it and a way not to do it. And that's what these men were in danger of, as old Brother Cole saw it. But as a result of that, in 1918, after a number of years of the elders working back and forth with the reorganized church, because the Utah church wasn't very interested in working with us at all, they formed what was called the 24 points of working harmony with the reorganized church. And then again they began to petition the Lord. And in March of 1919, a manifestation was given, which you'll find recorded in the September 15, 1925 Advocate on page 12, which I had copied out a number of years ago in longhand and found out I can't hardly read it sometimes, but I'll try. It says, "As I have said in the past, so say I unto you now, that ye shall be as little Joseph, who was carried captive into Egypt. Ye shall be the means of saving your brethren." Now, I don't think at all that any of them understood that saved in the nature that Christ, in the way that Christ saves us. But it's more in the nature of preserving them, or helping them, or opening up their understanding. And it's brought out as he goes along. "Saving your brethren and bringing them to a unity of purpose and action before me for the time of the building of the temple and the fulfilling of the prophets is at hand, and the work must be accomplished speedily." That was in 1919. I was about, well, I wasn't quite 14 because this was in March and my birthday comes in December. So I've had before me through my life in various places and various means that the temple was to be built speedily at some time. And we haven't done it. We haven't got into it. We haven't moved forward to accomplish it. In the Articles of Faith, I knew I was going to leave something in this thing. I'll try not to get... I'm sorry. I'm kind of like Brother Jensen. These things scare me to death because it's kind of like being tied up. The 23rd article of the Articles of Faith reads like this. We believe a temple will be built in this generation in Independence, Missouri. Almost word for word as the revelation that was given before. Wherein Christ will reveal himself and endow his servants, whom he chooses, with power to preach the gospel in all the world, to every kindred, tongue, and people, that the promise of God to Israel may be fulfilled. You may remember, and I'm not going to try to turn to it. I'm almost sure my time's either run out or getting close to it. That Christ, when he had selected his disciples, which he called apostles, in Jerusalem, he told them after his resurrection, before they went out to preach the gospel, which was a commission he gave them, to tarry in Jerusalem until they had been endowed by the Holy Spirit. And we call that occasion the day of Pentecost, in which his Spirit rested upon the disciples or the apostles in such power, in various forms, in which the record says that men who had gathered from all over the places where the Jewish nation had been expelled to and had gathered there for that feast day could hear the spoken word in their own language, no matter in what language that apostle spoke it. Now that's what one of the revelations of which I had read is the promise of the house of the Lord on the temple lot was to be. There is a record in the Evening and Morning Star, which was printed here in Independence, Missouri, I had to mark this up, so I put a piece of wax paper on top of it so I could see through it and keep track of where I had thought that I wanted to read, but this was printed in May of 1902, there on the temple lot in a little print shop, which was in one of the back rooms at one time. And it says, it's not signed, it says a nailer in the church, but I believe this was John R. Haldeman, who was the editor, the advocate, and it's sort of in the form of an editorial. Headed as an open letter and addressed to the men who call themselves elders and claim the right to officiate such in the restored gospel. And down a ways, this paragraph says, at the beginning of the work, its form was simple and the duty of officers and members easily understood. But as the principle of gathering was introduced and the necessity of a more general and complete organization became apparent, the entire church and its officers found themselves confronting propositions that were entirely new to them. The New Testament and the Book of Mormon afforded ample light concerning the basic principles of the faith, but when it came to the question of a gathering, the creation of bishops, choosing apostles, which incidentally they were commanded to do, shortly after the church was organized on the 6th of April, 1830, and never accomplished for at least 4 to 8 years later. Creation of bishops and apostles with their endowment, they met a serious proposition and one in which the wisest of them had no schooling. It is true that divine instructions were vouchsafed from time to time, but the work had now taken on a phase which was largely educational, and there was not always clear understanding of the divine revelations, as Brother Haldeman is making, trying to give us some understanding as to what he felt happened to the early church. The commandments of God given for the direction of his people and a great and important work entrusted to them were understood in different ways by the different men upon whose shoulders fell the burden and the carrying on of the work. And the passing years have not served to harmonize the different views taking concerning the commandments of God, but have rather tended to crystallize the diverging sentiments into three or four distinct groups termed factions of the Mormon Church. Now, some of us get offended when we're referred to as Mormons. I heard some reorganized people, of whom I have some very dear friends and loved ones, I might say, in that church, because this upheaval, which happened in Kirtland a day or so ago, it was referred to as people who belong to the Mormon Church, a Mormon church. Well, eventually they corrected that and said they'd formerly belonged to the reorganized church. But no matter what church they belong to, no matter what your beliefs may be or what you'd like to be called, the minute they find out that you believe, teach, or profess to believe and teach the Book of Mormon, you become Mormons. And so the same thing here, Brother Haldeman or whoever wrote this, refers to the factions of the Mormon Church. A little further down in this, he makes this observation. While to Joseph Smith was entrusted the task of the formation of the church, yet the carrying on of the work was to be shared by many. For this cause, the Lord made provision of a quorum of 12 apostles who was to have power and authority equal to the 12 in Palestine and also the 12 among the Nephites. Notwithstanding the provision made for the choosing and formation of this in his foreknowledge, he knew that an opposing element would retard and prevent, if possible, its consummation. And year after year was allowed to lapse without a vigorous action taken toward the discharging the obligation to choose the 12. The Lord severely chastised the church for its neglect in this respect and told them, and I read this a while ago, "Wherefore ye must needs be chastened and stand rebuked before my face, for ye have sinned against me a very grievous sin, in that ye have not considered the great commandment in all things that I have given unto you concerning the building of mine house, for the preparation wherewith I desire to prepare mine apostles to prune my vineyard for the last time." Now this particular quote comes out of section 92, in which he is speaking particularly to the calling and the endowment of the Council of Apostles to take the gospel to the world, just like he did in Jerusalem. That they tarry until they had been endowed by the Holy Spirit. While an attempt was made several years after this to secure the endowment mentioned above, yet the incidents connected with the attempt are such as to preclude the logical conclusion that it was successful. God had set two marked and distinct events which were to follow the endowment of the 12, mention of one of which is found in the section we have just quoted from and others contained in the Book of Mormon. It's essential that when the gospel is taken to the world, as it says in some of the old prophecies, as a witness before the end come, that it go in its purity, not in its confused form, in which, as Brother Haldeman says up here, that various men, in all due respect to their sincerity and desires, had different viewpoints and understanding, just like we do. But God's not going to let that go forth as a witness to the world. It has to be in its purest form. And that can only come by the endowment. A little further over, and then I think I'm going to quit. No promise. I just think I will. It says, when the Lord, and he's speaking about the Kirtland Temple. When the Lord made provision for the building of the Kirtland Temple, he also made provision for the erection of a house in Independence. This house in Independence was to serve a mighty purpose. It seems like the Lord is outlining what would be accomplished within its walls and made provisions for the accomplishment of all things concerning the preparation of the ministry commanded at the beginning but neglected by those charged with their accomplishments in Kirtland. And he goes ahead and tells of some of the things which took place there. And you can find this, you can get a hold of one of these Evening and Morning Stars in the May 19-2 issue on page 2 and 3. He goes ahead and says over here about the need for building the temple, and again repeats the things that it was to accomplish for us. We heard a testimony this morning in our sacrament service, which I'd heard once before from Sister Colleen, in which she had, after bearing a testimony in one of the prayer meetings, had gone out on the temple lot and held her own private little prayer, as many Indian people do and some others. And in the process of her prayer, what I would term a vision appeared to her, in which she saw a foundation of a building out on the site where she was standing, which happened to be in the middle of the current layout of a building which we have out there. And then she saw out of this foundation pillars. She didn't see the whole building, but she saw the pillars of it. And then a personage, which she didn't describe when she talked to me who it was, nor did she this morning, appeared, and she received a message, I'll say, for want of a better way to put it in my words, that this was the spot to which Christ would return. Now, we have a responsibility as a people, and I would hope that as we consider what to do from this tragic event which has taken place this week, that we consider that the Lord has laid upon us a much greater responsibility to build His house, that He might come to us as a ministry and as a people and perfect us in theory and in doctrine. I was asked a year or so ago by one of the ministry if I thought we truly could, little people as we are, I'll put it in my words, could build a temple. I don't know where we could, but my answer is that if it's the Lord's will, we can. I sincerely believe with all my heart that if we follow the directions which the Lord has already given us and begin to build a basement, there will be people from all over the restoration and outside who will give of their offerings to assist us. I don't think it's any news to any of you. I would hope it's not. And not too long ago, one of the groups that have split off from their organized church wanted to lease it for 99 years and build it themselves. Whether they could or not, it's another point. A few years ago, an elder who had become disaffected with that organization in the Chicago area over a period of about a year, he wrote me a letter wanting to know if he could place his tithing with us in our temple fund. And he made the comment in the letter that he felt that if anybody was to have the direction or the supervision of building the temple, it would be that little group on the temple. And he ended up, over a period of about a year, of making an offering of close to $5,000. Well, that's not enough to build a temple. Don't misunderstand me. But it's a beginning. And if we follow the directions which the Lord gave in the early day and made the sacrifices of ourselves as a people, it can be done. I don't know how many of you have ever heard from the families and the old records of how we defended the temple lot in the lawsuit. The women sold their wedding rings and the men their watches and whatever jewelry they had, because to preserve it was more important to them than all of these things. We hear sermons from time to time, and we should, that we're too involved with the world. All too often we want to keep up with the neighbors next door or down the street. And we need to change our attitudes and our way of life and become a simpler people as to worldly goods and more dedicated to endeavoring under the direction of God to accomplish His important service, which He has told us over and over should be done speedily. Because the world is closing in. It's closing in. May God bless you and keep you. And may your faith be strong in the Lord, is our prayer. Oh, sorry about that.
You can let you get away.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you, Brother Leroy. It's not, forget the announcements. First, there will be a care group meeting next Saturday, the 13th at 7 p.m. at Patsy and Benny Case's home in Blue Springs.